You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny Lurie, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. Wanted to do a quicker podcast on the Warriors 107-98 win over the Houston Rockets at Oracle. A really interesting game that went in a lot of kind of different stages, and I think the best way to describe it is to just kind of run through them a little bit. So at the beginning, the Warriors weren't playing particularly well. They were flat on offense, and this happens sometimes with them, but I thought that in many ways their offense was betraying their defense, where they did an all right job defending. It wasn't their standout part of this game, much less overall, but they just couldn't get enough consistent offense. They were settling for some bad shots. They were also missing some shots they normally make, and so that was allowing the Rockets to get some more chances in transition, get some better looks in the half court, and not have to worry, you know, about really fighting to build a lead or anything in that sort. So the Warriors were really stagnating, and what they ended up doing to really turn the tide was Coach Kerr went to JaVale McGee, and so McGee played the last 5:37 of the second quarter. And to that point, so in the first 18 plus minutes, the Warriors had scored 31 points, and in that last 5:37, they scored 25 and cut the lead from 13-5, and McGee had 13 of those points. Not all of them were beautiful, but it was a lot of impressive energy from him and the Warriors knowing how to get him the ball. And I am not one to make big pronouncements. I'm not going to say because of that juice that he, you know, should have been in the game at the beginning, that he should start or anything crazy like that, but it was notable that the offense just looked so much better with him on the floor, and this game was also a reminder of just how much Zaza Pachulia can struggle against Houston in particular. Pachulia has had a nice year overall, but Houston's particular brand of pick and roll, especially when they involve athletic bigs like Clint Capella, who I thought did an all right job in this game. I thought he was better, actually, when they played earlier in the week, partially because he had a little bit of trouble finishing in this game and also missed some free throws. But the Rockets can get pretty good looks when Pachulia is on the floor. So we don't know if these teams are going to face each other. It actually got less likely by the Warriors winning this game because it all but locks up the number one seed for them, and Houston is going to be the three. So it pretty much puts them on separate sides. Now, that in no way prevents it because Houston can win their side of the bracket, as can the Warriors. And so then that would be the conference finals for the second year out of three. Anyway, that was one part of this story, was that the offense was really struggling early, and then the defense kind of helped kick it in. And something that Ethan Sherwood-Strauss noted, which is something that I've talked about on the show, but I thought he did a good job of articulating it, was that in the first half, the Rockets did a really nice job of capitalizing on the time when Stephen Curry sat. And that has been a moment with that current lineup that Kerr is going to a lot of Clark, Klay Thompson, Iguodala, Matt Barnes, and David West. They've been a little bit inconsistent. I thought they struggled in both quarters that they played a little bit early on with getting their offense, and the Rockets took advantage. They have a very good second unit. They actually played a very narrow rotation today. The Rockets only played eight guys total, so they had their normal starting five, but then they only played Montrezl Harrell instead of Nene, Lou Williams, and Sam Decker, and that's probably going to be their playoff rotation. Probably not even with that much of a change in terms of minutes. Beverly played 30 minutes. Capella played 26. Both those might kick up a little bit, whereas the Warriors, beyond the whole Kevin Durant being out part of this, Curry, Thompson, Green, I think they would all step up a little bit from there. So that was really the story at the beginning. I thought the Warriors were flat for most of the beginning of the game, but they were only down five at halftime, partially because I think it was Iguodala hit a big three at the end of the half, which cut the lead from 8-5. And as is often the case when that happens for the Warriors, when it feels like they should be down more at halftime or at the end of the third quarter, that is very bad news for the other team. Because you need to, when you have a chance to take them out, you need to take them out. And even in the case of that Spurs game on Wednesday, sometimes that's not even enough. So what the Warriors did in that second half was they actually held it pretty firm. They were better, but not great in the third quarter. McGee had another solid stretch. He didn't score. I don't think he scored at all, but he had four blocks, which was interesting. He had a nice game overall, and the Warriors were really able to kind of keep it flat during that time. And then the big switch that happened was they were, again, so you had that second unit, and the Warriors' second unit in the fourth quarter did not do a particularly good job of scoring. They had a couple of awkward possessions. Again, I think they were 1-for-5 from three. But what they did was at the, I think it was about the 9:30 mark, they started playing really good defense. They were playing solid defense before, but they were playing good defense. And then at the, I think it was the 7:30 mark, Draymond Green came back in. And from that point on, the Warriors were absolutely dominant, especially defensively. They were spectacular during the end of the game. The Rockets went on a stretch of, I think it was 6:59, so almost 7 minutes, where they didn't score at all. Some of that was a little bit of luck. I think Capella missed a few shots, including two free throws, and he's a bad free throw shooter, but missing two is there. But the Warriors were playing excellent defense, getting attacking from all over, and that was helping them get enough offense to really push in. And the Warriors, actually, it was interesting. They had that great defense for another couple minutes, and then it wasn't until Stephen Curry came in, which was at about the 5 minute mark, because there weren't any stoppages, because the Warriors were getting stops basically every time. They weren't fouling, and the Rockets were either getting stops or they were giving up, you know, a couple of small baskets. So there weren't many stoppages. And then when Curry came in, the defense continued for another couple minutes, and that's when they really started scoring. But what I was amused by about that was that the Warriors in that overall stretch, you know, when Curry came in, they really did start pushing the lead. I think they pushed it to 8. But Curry did not have a single basket during that stretch. He ended up scoring a few big ones after that. He actually, immediately after Harden got the 3, which ended the about 7 minutes of scoreless time for the Rockets, Curry immediately responded with a 3, put the lead back up to 8, and the crowd went absolutely insane. And from there, it pretty much just kind of petered out, and the game played out the string. Not too big a surprise from there. But it was an absolutely dominant defensive performance when the team really engaged. There were a few different elements of it that I thought were amazing. So one was, there's a stat now with SportView, I brought it up a couple times on this podcast, of they try to measure what an opponent shoots when a certain player is defending at the rim. So it's within their, when they're within a certain proximity. And the Rockets were only 2-for-10 when Draymond Green was defending at the rim. 20% is a ridiculously low rate, even on, you know, on contested shots, on pretty much anything there. And that was really, really impressive. And then the other one that I thought was funny was JaVale McGee had 5 blocks. He actually, SportMuse had this, that he was the first player with 5 or more blocks in less than 12 minutes since Sagana Jop years ago, which I thought was cool. So depending on when you listen to this, you can see I will have retweeted it, actually scheduled a retweet, which I didn't know you could do. So did that, and fascinating game again by JaVale. I mean, he had the 13 points in the second quarter, and then he was 5 blocks, but was also, the Rockets were 5-of-10 when he was contesting at the rim. Now, you don't know if those are the same 5 misses, but it's something close to that, where basically every shot he contested that he didn't block went in, which is a strangely amusing thing about McGee that I've noticed, is that he is good at contesting and he can be good at changing shots, but for whatever reason, it feels like guys make a fair amount of the ones that he doesn't get to. And so I just thought that was interesting, but nothing too big. Going back to Green, he was phenomenal defensively. I know many people, and I would be included among them, could use this as a key piece of his defensive player of the year sizzle reel. A lot of great contests late. I think there were 4 shots in a row during that big sequence in the fourth quarter where he contested plays at the rim, and that's what makes him different from a lot of other players. I mean, Rudy Gobert is a phenomenal defensive player and is very good at that specifically, but Draymond's versatility to fill that part of the game ably, but then also do so many other elements of defense, including switching. That versatility is not definitive. It's not saying, oh, it's an easy decision, but I think that's a good part of his argument. And that's also reflected by another stat that I love in terms of the hustle stats, which are on SportView as well. Beyond having a team and I believe game-leading 6 deflections, he actually tied with Trevor Ariza and James Harden, incidentally. And he had that, but Draymond also contested 17 shots, which is an absolute ton. And why I thought the 17 shot contest was really interesting is that 7 of those 17 were contested 3-pointers. And that is the nature of playing the Houston Rockets. They're getting shooting from all over, even without Ryan Anderson. And Green did not play that much center in this game. He did in the closing kick, and I think one other short stint. But being able to play on the perimeter, being able to play in the interior is what makes him special and what makes him do so well. And beyond Draymond and McGee, who I thought were in many ways the most interesting players of this game. I thought the real headliners were Andre Iguodala had another phenomenal game, good defense, responsible offense. His jumper wasn't falling as insanely well as it was the last couple games, but it was still more than good enough, and the Rockets were leaving him open and he was making them pay. He also went 4 of 5 from the line. He didn't go 4 of 5 from the line. Stephen Curry did. Close enough. No, but Iguodala was 14 points, 6 of 12 from the field, 2 of 6 from 3. He did not get to the free throw line at all and continued his ridiculous run of 5 assists and no turnovers. He also had 3 blocks because they were just mauling in there, just going after the Rockets guys. I don't mean mauling in terms of fouling. I just mean mauling in terms of making them uncomfortable and being in their space. And the Warriors have this special talent, and I've been thinking about it as I've been writing, you know, writing the book on them and thinking about also the teams with Bogut and Iguodala and Green, about the idea of having 3 really high-end defenders. And while they aren't playing with Kevin Durant right now, you can see just the destruction that Green and Iguodala, even by their lonesome, and they got good help from Matt Barnes and Clay and numerous other guys, but what those guys can do. And that also ties in, I thought David West played very well in the fourth quarter. He was shakier in the first half, but I thought he did a nice job in that fourth quarter being a part of the group that was so good defensively. And then the Splash Brothers were pretty much the Splash Brothers. They were what it's been recently, where Curry got to the line a couple times, Klay didn't, and they made a fair amount of the open shots they got and created some nice looks, and then also didn't make them with the ruthless efficiency that has characterized the last couple of years. So they both ended up with 20 plus points. They both ended up about 50% from the field. So that isn't to say that they're fixed or anything is, you know, or that, you know, that anything in definitively in that direction, but they're doing enough to make it work. And there was some discussion after the game, Coach Kerr talked about it, about how, you know, Draymond in this game contributed so much despite having trouble shooting from the field. And something I've been wondering about is whether they want to curtail that at all. Because Draymond, just the way I put it tonight when I was sitting next to Andy Liu, I talked with him about, is I think Draymond is too confident in his jump shot. But at the same point, if, and some would say when, it turns around, that'll be a very good thing because you want to have that confidence. And you also don't want to throw that doubt in someone's mind, because his willingness to shoot means that players are going to come out on him. And as long as they respect his shot enough to actually contest. So it's a balance that they're going to need to strike, and it doesn't need to get into the crazy thing like what happened in that infamous Oklahoma City game during the regular season last year. It doesn't need to get to that degree, but it's something to consider. But also, yeah, his jump shot wasn't going, but Draymond was contributing offensively. He was setting good screens. He had 8 assists. He had an offensive rebound, but was active on the glass and was kind of helping discombobulate a lot of things that were going on with the Rockets. So I'm not as worried about the shooting in that sense, as long as it doesn't become like a design of the opponent's defense, which is actually something that the Warriors do very well. If they identify somebody as a willing shooter, not a capable shooter, then they will try to maximize that player's opportunities. And the best example of that actually is the team it looks like the Warriors are probably going to play in the first round. That's the Portland Trailblazers. Last year, the Warriors made a concerted effort to make sure that the open looks that happened as part of their offense went to Maurice Harkless and went to Al-Farouq Aminu, who are their starting 3 and 4, and both are inconsistent at best shooters. So Draymond is not at that level right now, but it is something to kind of keep in the back of your mind. The other difference is that the Warriors, through their defense, can create a lot in transition and can create looks for their numerous other scorers. And while Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum are great, it is a little bit different with those two lineups. So something to watch moving forward. And then two other kind of broad scope storylines that happened during this game. One is the Spurs ended up pulling out a win against Oklahoma City, but since the Warriors won, they kept the lead for the one seed at 3.5 games. The Warriors only have 6 left. So that's getting really close to done, especially considering the very favorable schedule that the Warriors have the rest of the way. So it'll probably be a little bit until they formally clinch, but we're getting close to the point where you can say it's a matter of when, not if. It's not all the way done, but it's awfully close. And then the other massive development is the news, which is unfortunate and disappointing, that Yusuf Nurkic, who has been the talented center for the Portland Trailblazers, they acquired him right before the trade deadline in the big deal with the Denver Nuggets, which has really burned Denver because they swapped Nurkic for Mason Plumlee, their Portland starting center, and they got the worst end of that deal, but also threw in a first round pick. Nurkic has been great for them. Unfortunately, it was announced today that Nurkic suffered a non-displaced fracture in his fibula in his right leg. And so what that means as a practical matter is that he's going to be out for at least 2 weeks, and then he's going to be reevaluated. The playoffs start in almost exactly 2 weeks. And generally, if a guy has a broken anything in their leg, reevaluation, not only does that mean that he's probably going to have limited movement, so stamina and things like that are going to be affected, but they're going to be really cautious with him. So no definitive thing of, oh, he's out for the first round series or anything crazy like that. But it could be a tougher process for Portland than they wanted, and they're dealing with other big man issues because Ed Davis is already out for the year, and former Warrior Festus Ezeli is out as well. He, you know, that they're dealing with that issue too. So unfortunately, Festus has not made it on the floor this year. So Portland is going to be in a more limited state. I think that's fair to say at the bare minimum. And while some are saying, oh, maybe they're going to miss the playoffs, I think their schedule is soft enough and they have built up enough of a lead that they still will make it in. It's not definitive because, you know, they can just really fall off. We haven't seen them without Nurkic yet. So that's going to be something to watch over the weekend for those of you who are interested in that. And what I'm going to do actually is I'm going to end this show, since I already have the audio cut and didn't figure out a way to weave it into this. I asked both Coach Kerr and Stephen Curry questions after the game, and I will just include those after the show. So you can listen to those. And I asked Steph about the idea of kind of having some slow starts and making their way out of it. And then I asked Kerr about the benefits of playing the Rockets, a team that's just a pain to defend, playing them twice towards the end of the year, whether or not the Warriors face them in the playoffs. And so he had an interesting answer on that. I thought both of their answers were worthwhile, which is why I'm including it in the podcast. So I cannot guarantee exactly what the timing is going to be, not only for Sunday night / Monday morning, but for the rest of the week, because I'm actually making my way after the game. I will be there live. I'm making my way after the game up to Portland, Oregon for the Nike Hoop Summit, which is a cool event that is kind of the next generation of guys. So it's going to be players who are going to be going into generally their freshman year of college. So the guys who are going to be in the draft next year in 2018. So last year I watched Josh Jackson, I watched Harry Giles, Jason Tatum, all those type of guys. And so I will be up there. I will still be watching the Warriors. I will still be keeping an eye on it, but my timing might be a little bit different just because the obligations there can sometimes take it. So, you know, maybe I'll be watching games a little bit later in the night or maybe the next morning, but I will still do my absolute best to make sure that you get quality material out of me. That's part of the commitment that I have to you and to the show. So that's enough for now. If you have any feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, DannyLarueNBA@gmail.com, @DannyLarue on Twitter. You can also read my work. I already wrote my game analysis. It is at The Athletic, as it always is. And I should have the Every Player up, which is on the Athletic app, some point tomorrow morning. I have part of it written, and I'm assuming I'm going to crash soon enough, so it'll probably be tomorrow morning, but I'm going to be working on that as well. And if you want to support the show, leave a rating, leave a review in the podcast player of your choosing. Subscribe, download every episode, spread the word however you see fit. And also check out SeatGeek. They're not a sponsor for this one, but promo code LO Warriors for Locked On Warriors, and you get a $20 rebate on your first purchase. Tell them you came from us. So I'm giving them a little bit of a read there. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day. The Rockets are a tough team to guard. You've talked before about their ability to draw fouls. Is there a benefit to playing them twice in pretty quick succession this close to the playoffs? I mean, who knows if you're going to play them, but just to have that experience right now.
Sure. They're a great team, really hard to guard, and Harden puts so much pressure on you. And I thought we made a big improvement tonight from the other night in terms of not reaching. They still went to the line a lot in the first half, but in the end they ended up with 23 free throws. It was 39 the other night. So I thought we learned quite a bit and made a good adjustment. And, we'll see what happens down the road. But it's always good to be challenged and play against a great team because it forces you to really be on edge and ready.
This is a couple games now where you guys have had a good win against a great team, and there was still a stretch early on where the team struggled a little bit. Is that frustrating, or do you kind of get comforted by the fact that you know that you can come back and win?
Well, we're not going to – every game's not perfect. We understand that. In the playoffs, you're not going to – you know, in the first 6 minutes, just blitz somebody and go up double digits. And there might be nights like tonight where it takes a while for you to kind of find a rhythm, but you know, you got to win games all sorts of different ways. So, you know, from the San Antonio game where you're down 20 whatever in the first quarter to tonight where it's kind of close, but we couldn't find any real momentum until late in the second quarter. You just got to stick with the program and focus on every possession and try to you know figure it out. So, kind of feel like these last four games have all had playoff intensity, and we've come out on top on all of them, just winning all sorts of different ways.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.